Our reading consists of two poems. The first poem was written by Rumi. He was born in 1207 in Afghanistan and fled the primitive armies of the Mongols to Roman Anatolia, from whence his name comes, Deja Vu. The second poem, Only Breath, is written by a modern contemporary poet, very famous in the Muslim and Arab world, born in Latakia, Syria. It's called Only Breath. Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Even if you have broken your vow 1,000 times, come yet again. Only breath. Not Christian or Jew or Muslim, not Hindu, Buddhist, Sufi or Zen, not any religion or cultural system. I am not from the East or the West, not out of the ocean or up. From the ground, not natural or ethereal, not composed of elements at all, I do not exist, am not an entity in this world or the next, did not descend from Adam and Eve or any origin story. My place is placeless, a trace of the traceless, neither body or soul. I belong to the beloved, have seen the two worlds as one, and that one call to know. First, last, outer inning, only that breath-breathing human being. There is a way between voice and presence where information flows. In disciplined silence it opens. With wandering talk it closes. Please join me in reading our mission statement. We gather in community to nourish souls, transform lives, and to do justice. Our meditation reading is by a Persian Muslim poet, Sufi, named Hafiz. Hafiz means desire out of love. It's the same word in Arabic and Hebrew. This poem is called Light. He lived at the time of Chaucer. Light will someday split you open, even if your life is now a cage. For a divine seed, the crown of destiny is hidden and sown on an ancient, fertile plain you hold the title to. Love will surely bust you wide open into an unfettered, blooming new galaxy, even if your mind is now a spoiled mule. A life-giving radiance will come. The friend's gratuity will come. Oh, look again within yourself, for I know you were once the elegant host to all the marvels in creation. From a sacred crevice in your body, a bow rises each night and shoots your soul into God. Behold, the beautiful drunk singing one from the lunar vantage point of love. He is conducting the affairs of the whole universe while throwing wild parties in a treehouse on a limb in your heart.
Our faith is not merely a private matter, but it is also a public one as well. I think it is important that we cultivate the spiritual lives of people that come within our orbits of influence. But it is equally true that we should see the ways our faith, our way of seeing the world, has relevance for the wider society we are a part of and which affects all of us. I have known people who have made a religion of social activism. I have known people who have made a religion of personal piety. I've known people who've made a personal religion of anti-piety. And there is that tendency to fall within the one or the other, the inner world or the outer world.
I find it intriguing that in your mission statement, you strike a balance. We're here to nourish souls, but the last two words are, and do justice. To nourish the soul of people, to nourish what is within, to help flourish, help people flourish their sense of trust and hope and their capacity to love, their ability to treasure and cherish their lives and the lives of their loved ones. Yes, but to also see how this inner orientation speaks to the wider issues that we are inevitably linked to. Today, I wish to reflect briefly on how our faith provides commentary and perspective on what is happening in our culture in the form of Islamophobia. Islamophobia reveals the human tendency found in many places and in many forms to project all the bad things of life onto the other and to maintain the belief that oneself and one's group contains all the virtue there is in the world. Violence in the name of Islam has created a convenient target. It is true that there are people in the world who are prone to violence, who will claim their faith stance as bolstering and grounding that violence. One could lay blame, if one wished to, for certain forms of the white supremacy movement and on certain people who have killed doctors who've done work at abortion clinics on the door of certain branches of the Christian religion. But we do not commonly do that, except perhaps in moments of weakness, because we regard it as a distortion of the larger faith of the Christian movement. There are people in every faith group of every tribe on this earth who will use their religion to bolster anything they do or say without rhyme or reason or justification. It is obvious, however, that we are living in a society where attacks against Islam and the people of that faith are increasing. A parishioner recently wrote me that she was traveling in a nearby town and saw a truck with the entire back bumper painted with the message on it, "Everything I need to know about Islam, I learned on 9/11. This was overlaying a painting of buildings on fire. Such Islamophobia was on full display recently around the proposed construction of a mosque and activity center near the site of the World Trade Center at which the attacks of 9/11 occurred. Abdul Raf, an Egyptian-American imam, recently received national attention for his involvement with an effort to build an Islamic community center, not just a mosque, but a community center, two blocks away from Ground Zero in Lower Manhattan. A highly vocal group of people and groups argued vociferously against that movement, saying it was a desecration of the memory of those who died in 9/11. This position against the building of the mosque is, in my opinion, wrong for a number of reasons, and all forms of Islamophobia that are shades and variations of this position are wrong for, in my opinion, the following reasons. First, consider the foundation upon which this country was established. The founders of this country fled here, at least to some extent, sometimes to a large extent, but always to some extent, to escape religious prosecution. And for the right to practice privately what they believed in their heart, rather than simply going along with the most favored religion of the majority or the powerful. That is a historical fact. How can, in such a country so founded, there be a place for religious intolerance? Secondly, Islamophobia is wrong from a constitutional standpoint. The very First Amendment states, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech." That is not ambiguous. But let me amplify this succinct point further. The spirit of religious tolerance and openness that was part of the ground of the founding of this country is present and on display magnificently in the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, drafted in 1777 by Thomas Jefferson. In 1786, the Virginia General Assembly enacted the statute into the state's law. The statute of religious freedom is one of only three things that Jefferson said, "Remember me by this." He was so proud of it. It supported the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment. Let me share with you certain key passages of this work. "All attempts to influence religious belief by temporal punishments or burdens or by civil incapacitations tend only to beget habits of hypocrisy and meanness, and therefore are a departure from the plan of the holy author of our religion, who chose not to propagate it by coercions. The impious presumption of legislators and rulers, civil as well as ecclesiastical, who, being themselves but fallible and inspired persons, have assumed dominion over the faith of others, setting up their own opinions and modes of thinking as the only true and infallible, and as such endeavoring to impose them on others, and have established and maintained false religions by so doing over the greatest part of the world and throughout all time. Therefore, the proscribing any citizen as unworthy the public confidence, unless he profess or renounce this or that religious opinion, is depriving him injuriously of those privileges and advantages to which, in common with his fellow citizens, he or she has a natural right. That so doing tends only to corrupt the principles of that very religion it is meant to encourage. And finally, that truth is great and will prevail if left to herself. That she is the proper and sufficient antagonist to error, and has nothing to fear from that conflict, unless by human interposition, disarmed of her natural weapons, free argument and debate, error ceasing to be dangerous when it is permitted freely to contradict them. Be it enacted by that all persons shall be free to profess, and by argument to maintain, their opinions and matters of religion, and that the same shall in no wise diminish, enlarge, or affect their civil capacities." Now, Thomas Jefferson is as clear can get about that. And this particular statue is a larger window into that frame of mind of our founders that is reflected merely succinctly in a line or two in our First Amendment. Third, Islamophobia is wrong from a religious standpoint. Let us look specifically at our religious denomination, Unitarian Universalism. The name Unitarian Universalism suggests first, with that word Unitarian, that we are all united, that all human beings are united in one cosmos, in one life. We are merely parts of some huge, vast life. The second word, universalist, means that all people are in fundamental ways equal. Now, beyond this general orientation, our first principle affirms the worth and dignity of all persons. Further, our statement of principles includes the point that Unitarian Universalists draws from many religious sources, including all the religions of the world. So there is woven into the fabric of our religious movement an openness for and a tolerance for other religious faith. Our religious tradition, although it is not the time and place for me to talk about this, but our religious tradition is the most thoroughly American, the most thoroughly grounded in the principles this nation was founded on, more than any other faith orientation in this country. But let me press forward to the broader religious basis for arguing against Islamophobia. Let us consider for a moment the words and deeds of a Jewish itinerant wisdom teacher whom historians and believers refer to as Jesus. Now, contrary to popular opinion, Jesus does not belong to a particular religious community. In fact, Jesus was the first Unitarian Universalist. He just didn't get credit for it. If you study the words and teachings of Jesus as found in the New Testament, there are several lessons and themes that emerge irresistibly. One of them is that Jesus' teachings and actions reveal a person open to and being loving toward and being accepting of the stranger, the foreigner, the one who is different, the one who believes differently, the one who is alien culturally, religiously, and ethnically. The parable of the Good Samaritan, which I will not discuss here, is an example of this very phenomenon. Jesus expressed and lived out solidarity with prostitutes, people who were unorthodox, people who were non-believers, people who had loathsome and frightening diseases, and on and on. So it is wrong, in my opinion, for the Christian community to align itself with anything that is in any way Islamophobic. Finally, one of the most compelling aspects of this issue is the man behind the mosque project. Abdul Raf has stated many times that it is his mission to bring together the Muslim world and the West. The last time he went to the Middle East, it was a trip sponsored and paid for by the State Department. The British author Karen Armstrong said, "Raf is a bridge figure. Here we have a Muslim who can speak to Western people in a way that they can understand." Fareed Zakari, editor-at-large for Time magazine, has praised Raf for speaking, and I quote him, of the need for Muslims to live peacefully with all other religions, for emphasizing the commonalities among all faith, for advocating equal rights for women, and opposing laws that in any way punish non-Muslims. Walter Isaac, head of the Aspen Institute, has similarly praised this individual. So this is a religious leader who loves America, who wants to build bridges, and yet the anxiety level is so high in society that they cannot be open to this magnificent example of moderation and bridge building. The Islamophobia that is so clearly in evidence in our society is part of a much larger and much more powerful pattern, namely the regression of society. In a regression, people tend to react and act immaturely. They tend to act as though they were a child. They tend to be locked in the emotional, infantile world of a very young person. And if you do that over time, rather than being objective and having a long-term perspective, negative things happen to the family, to a relationship, to a church, to a community, to anything. And what we see happening in this country is a large-scale regression that has been going on since the late 1950s. One of my mentors, Rabbi Friedman, after decades of work with institutions, began to develop ways of being able to determine the extent to which a family or a congregation or an institution or even a country was exhibiting signs of regression. And here's what he concluded after decades of work. He said, any group of people, however small or big, is showing regression if they have the following characteristics. Number one, the perception of threat to personal safety and well-being is high. Two, there is a constant demand for quick and simplistic solutions to problems or to threats that must be solved immediately. Three, there's a continual positing of an external enemy who is the cause of all that is wrong with self and the world. Four, there's a rampant tendency to blame others and a failure for individuals to take responsibility for their own lives and life course. Next, there is an excessive emotional responsiveness and seriousness to almost everything that happens. And finally, there is a tendency to focus on techniques for quickly solving problems that habitually overrides the tendency to look at the system as a whole and in a long-term perspective. And last but not least, there is a constant willing of others, of people to try to change other people. It is clear that our society is in the grip of these tendencies. You can see it on television and in many other places. You can see it by the maturity level of our political leaders on a national level. Other symptoms are the incivility of political commentators on television. Another, and the one that is most troubling, is the inability to define and solve problems and mobilize energy and effort to get solutions accomplished. In the face of the rampant immaturity of society, I would like to commend this congregation, because I've been very blessed in being able to encounter the life of this congregation, and I have been very blessed by getting to know the leaders of your congregation. Rabbi Friedman said that just as there are signs of immaturity, there are also signs of maturity. And here, he said, are those signs. A capacity for playfulness and humor, a willingness to accept personal responsibility, an openness to diversity of opinions without being and becoming anxious, a careful deliberation made before actions are taken, the prevalence of feelings of security over insecurity, The capacity of people to agree with others for the sake of the common good without a sense of sacrificing themselves or their integrity. A tendency to make decisions based on facts rather than feelings, theories, imagination, groupthink, or what seems popular. You and your leadership specifically have embodied these qualities. And by doing so, you as a community have become and are now and will be as you move into the future a place that is a haven and a harbor for people in our anxious society to find a way forward, to find a group of people who can be guided by principles in a non-anxious way rather than just being pulled to and fro by the anxiety storms of our society. I close with these thoughts. On September the 12th, 1960, Democratic presidential candidate Senator John F. Kennedy spoke to the Greater Houston Ministerial Association praising religious tolerance. Here's part of what he said. "I am wholly opposed to the state being used by any religious group to compel, prohibit, or persecute the free exercise of any other religion. I believe in an America where religious intolerance will someday end, where all men and women and all religious communities will be treated as equal. I believe in an America where every person has the same right to attend or not attend the religious institution of their choice. UU communities, think about it, are precisely the kind of religious communities which President Kennedy called attention to our society needing. This is amply true in relationship to the issue of Islamophobia, but it is equally true for many, many other issues we face. I hope people in this congregation and in all UU congregations can begin to see the importance of what we are about. I hope more UUs can begin to see that without exception, our religious tradition is more deeply and comprehensively in harmony with the principles and values of this republic than any other religious group. I hope our vision of who we are, what we may be, and what we can contribute to the world may expand."
Our benediction is by the poet Rumi, and it's called Through Love. Through love, bitterness becomes sweet. Through love, bronze turns into gold. Through love, dregs turn to tasteful wine. Through love, pain turns into a balm. Through love, the thorns become the rose. Through love, vinegar turns to wine. Through love, the cross becomes a throne. Through love, the burden becomes a fortune. Through love, the prison becomes a garden. Through love, the fire turns to light. Through love, the demon becomes an angel. Through love, the stone becomes butter. Without love, wax turns into steel. Through love, sorrow becomes happiness. Through love, the follower becomes the leader. Through love, the sting becomes honey. Through love, the lion becomes a mouse. Through love, illness becomes health. Through love, a curse becomes a blessing. Through love, the thorn becomes a needle. Through love, the home is lit up. Through love, the dead man becomes alive. Through love, the king becomes a slave. May we all be blessed with love.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.austinuu.org.